Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast, hosted by author Michael DeCamp and his family. Recorded in the Cutter's Notch studios, this podcast explores anything related to creativity. You'll find interviews with creative people, such as authors, artists, and performers, as well as friendly banter about any number of topics. Turn up the volume, listen, and catch up on what's happening in Cutter's Notch.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Cutter's Notch podcast. I'm your host, Michael DeCamp. I'm here with my co-host, Nancy DeCamp. Hi, Nancy.
Hello.
And we are excited for this episode because we have with us Thaddeus Starzyak.
Yes, I'm excited to be here. Thank you very much for having me.
We just feel blessed to have you here. And now I'm going to ask you this just straight off. Do you like to be called Thaddeus, or do you prefer the name they give you on the TV show? Do you prefer that or Tad?
Yeah, so I prefer Thaddeus now. When I was in high school, I had a little bit of a lisp, so I couldn't say my real name, so I really didn't like it then. But after I got over the lisp and I started telling people my name was Thaddeus, they're like, holy cow, that's an awesome
that's
name.
That's cool.
That's a cool name.
How many Thaddeus do you know, right?
Yeah. You know, first off, I've been trying to figure out what the plural of Thaddeus is, and I think it's Thaddei. How many Thaddei have
not,
I met?
Not Thaddeuses?
No. I think I've made up my own word. But I think I've met like four or five Thaddei, but I've never met one that spells Thaddeus with one D. And mine's spelled with one D.
One D.
Mm-hmm. I've met, you know, several Thaddeuses with two, but I haven't met the one with one yet. And that is going to be a special occasion.
When that finally happens.
When it finally happens.
Maybe you should start a Facebook group for people named Thaddeus.
I should just search for him.
Yeah.
Find the other Thaddeus with one D.
Well, hey, folks, before we get too far into this podcast, I do need to do a little bit of, I don't know, what do you call this? Housekeeping? Not really housekeeping, just a couple of announcements, I guess. First of all, my Loving Out Loud book is, by the time this particular podcast episode will air, there will be probably in the neighborhood of 10 or 12 episodes of a video YouTube. Basically, I'm doing YouTube videos chapter by chapter on the Loving Out Loud book.
So each chapter has a different video.
Yes, each chapter has a different video. They're available on YouTube. There's an introduction, and then each chapter will have its own episode. By the time we broadcast this podcast, my guess is 10 or 12 episodes will be up and available. So
remind me how many chapters are in that book.
17 or 16 or 17. Not now I'm kind of confused. I think it's 16 or 17.
Okay. Okay. So people want to pace themselves.
I'll be posting them now between now and mid-January. I think mid-January, the last one will go up. But right now, as we record, I think I'm just about to record chapter 6. But by the time this airs, we'll be closer to 10 or 12. So anyway, pretty excited. Just thought I'd let everybody know that you can find that. Just search Mike DeCamp, Loving Out Loud on YouTube, and you will find my video episodes. So check that out. Also, I need to give note to our sponsor, the official cider of the Cutter's Notch podcast, Ash and Elm Cider Company.
Yay, Ash and Elm.
Located at 1301 East Washington Street in Indianapolis. Both their cidery and their restaurant is located on East Washington.
Yeah, good food. If you like cider, lots of choices. If you don't like cider, great food.
In fact, I'm enjoying one of their ciders right now. It's called Autumn Tide, which it says it's made with real pumpkin and baking spices. Autumn Tide is the perfect cider for when the days get shorter and the weather turns brisk.
Well, we're facing that.
We're definitely there right now.
So check out Ash and Elm Cider Company on East Washington Street in Indianapolis. If you're not in Indianapolis, and a lot of our listeners aren't, you can find their stuff at ashandelmcider.com. Check out Ash and Elm Cider. All right, enough of that. Time for our creative indulgences. Thaddeus, we told you about that, right?
Yes,
So we do a little bit of time here where we're sharing about whatever it is that we're indulging in that's creative, that either something we're doing, something we're enjoying, something we're reading, watching, whatever we want to say. So, Nancy, you get to go first. We'll go around the table. Okay. So it'll be Nancy, Thaddeus,
and then you.
And then me.
It'll give me a little time to think.
You can think for a minute. So my creative indulgence, I would say today, is preparing for, we're doing kind of a Friendsgiving next week with some longtime friends of ours. And I got creative with a couple of things. So one of their birthdays is coming up, and I promised, I found a recipe for a praline pecan bourbon cheesecake for his birthday. So for the first time ever, I made this cheesecake this summer for another friend, but I didn't have pralines, and they're kind of hard to find in a regular candy store.
Yeah.
And so I made my own pralines. So this summer it was just had pecans on it, but this one going to kick it up a notch.
I think we need to go ahead and schedule me for the next podcast.
Yeah, yeah. So it's there. And then the other thing
we'll give you a taste of the pralines here before you leave.
Yeah, you can be a quality control. Yes. But the other thing that I will say, cooking is one of my creative indulgences. So all day today, in preparation for next week, I've been making what the family calls the sauce.
Ooh, so that sounds wonderful.
Homemade marinara, homemade meatballs. They cook all day long. And actually,
probably smell it right now.
Yeah, I can. It smells great.
But it's, I guess, great for vampires because there's a lot of garlic in it. But right. Or to ward the vampires off.
Yeah, keep them away.
Yeah, we won't have any in the house tonight, that's right. For sure.
I learned to make the sauce from my mother, who learned to make the sauce from an Italian lady. So my father was in World War II. And one of the guys that was in his unit were good friends, you know, wrote letters back and forth with family and stuff. He did not return from the war, but dad went and met the family. They lived in the Pittsburgh area, and they mom and pap, Jenny and Pap, were directly from
Italy.
Pap didn't speak a word of English. So I can remember as a little girl going to visit the family, and, you know, it was quite a sight when they all got together and such. But Jenny taught my mom how to make the sauce.
Yeah.
And then mom taught me. So we're going to have the sauce next week. And it's always better too, if you cook it and then let it rest and maybe cool should, and then come back the next day. You know.
Maybe you should crash the party.
I might crash the party. I mean, I have the address now.
You know, so. You know where we live, right?
Hey, you know, my tire went flat right in front of your driveway. I don't know how that happened. But, oh, wow, it smells great in here. Yeah.
Can I just hang out for a little bit while I wait for the...
I called AAA. They're on the way.
Yeah.
About an hour.
So we'll see. I've got to make the cheesecake. I'll make next weekend, but the prep for it. And I'm like, well, pralines aren't really that hard to make. So
yeah, maybe we'll see those again.
Maybe.
What about you, Thaddeus?
Yeah. So creative indulgences. I'm working on a book right now, so that's a big creative indulgence. And then I've also been working on my ambidexterity. So I've been trying to write with my right hand. So I journal every night.
Are you typically left-handed?
I am left-handed.
Okay.
Yep. So kind of just trying new things to create new neuronal paths. So I've tried to pick up the guitar this year. So I practice that for at least 5 minutes every day because I'm super busy.
Yeah,
so I'm
most guitars are made for right-handed people, right?
Yes, so, exactly.
Yeah.
So I play a right-handed guitar. I don't have a left-handed one. So I've been working on that. And then I use Duolingo every day.
Oh,
so,
I'm into Duolingo right now.
Sweet.
What language are you doing?
So I'm pretty fluent in Spanish. So I do that one just to practice.
Right.
And then I'm learning French.
Okay.
And I do, at least one lesson every day. Mm-hmm. If not a couple, if I can squeeze them in. So,
it's motivating to do it every day.
It is. It's great. And it helps you retain and. I have an affinity for languages, so I'm always trying to learn. Like whenever I go to the gas station, they speak Punjabi. Mm-hmm. So I've learned how to say key. There's a key I need to get into one of the drawers there, and that's a chabi, you know. So I'm like, can I get the chabi? And then when I leave, thank you is 10 wad. Mm-hmm. So, and just each time I go, I'm going to try to learn more and more. After I get one word down, it's going to be like, okay, the next one is, how are you? You know, so when you're learning languages, you typically know which words you need to ask next.
Right.
And then we'll get to the all important phrase. How do you say this in their language?
Yeah.
So like in Spanish, it's como se dice.
Yeah.
Como se dice this, you know, so we'll learn that phrase in Punjabi. And then, you know, everything else will unlock if I meet anybody else who speaks Punjabi.
There you go.
There you go. So how many different languages are you kind of toying around with? So you say you have an affinity for languages.
Yes.
So
yes.
What else?
So obviously English, very fluent in Spanish. I can get around a city in Polish. I could probably do pretty well in French now. I can read it pretty well. The hardest part is speaking it because I don't have anyone to necessarily speak it with.
With French?
Exactly. Yes,
yeah,
French.
Yeah, yeah.
And then because Italian is so similar to French, Spanish, and English.
You could get around.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So but the only phrase I know in Italian is Io mangio una mela, which is he's eating an apple, but it's really fun to say. And yeah, I'm actually a big fan of grammar. So parts of speech, adverb clauses, prepositions, which help out with writing a lot.
Oh yeah.
And they have a added effect. So understanding grammar very well translates to other languages and the conjugations and understanding the tenses and when you would use it and where the adverb goes in Spanish or the adjective goes rather than English, you know, so.
I've started with Duolingo to learn Scottish Gaelic. Ooh, I'm planning a hiking trip in Scotland next year. Now, I haven't worked out the details yet, but I thought, well, I need to make sure I know what they're saying about me when I'm there or to be able to.
To get around. Yeah, Duolingo is so cool like that.
It is.
It's just so many languages, and it tests you and your ability to speak it, to hear it, to write it. You know, in every way possible, it's testing you.
Now, is this an app on your phone?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll have to check that out.
Yeah,
because, I mean, I heard you kind of playing around with the, what was it, Scottish?
Yeah.
Or Welsh or whatever it is. And now you're talking about, I'm going to have to toy with that a little bit. I started to take Spanish at the University of Indianapolis a few years ago.
That's awesome.
And I took one, went to one class, and then my mother lived with us at the time, and she basically found out she had cancer right after I started that class. And so I dropped it.
Right.
And I never went back to it. So, but I've always, you know, I've got great friends at a nearby restaurant. I go and I hang out over there, and they all know me and they call me by name. And every once in a while, I'll throw out a Spanish word that I do know.
Yeah.
And then they respond in Spanish and I'm like,
that was the extent of my Spanish.
Yeah, that was it.
I'm sorry. False alarm.
No.
No puedo. Yo no puedo hablar más.
All right. So, my creative indulgence, first of all, are you good? Done.
Yeah. What is yours?
Mine is, there was a couple things. One, I watched a movie last night. So for all of you been following my East of Eden journey, yes, I'm still stuck in the middle of East of Eden. So that's not done yet. By the time you hear this podcast, I will have been done with East of Eden for a while.
Sure you will.
If you hear another podcast and I'm not done with that yet, then write me an email and tell me how
I will
nutty I am.
I will.
I will make sure you finished it when I check in on the meatballs.
All right.
And the sauce.
All right. You got, that's a deal. So I watched a movie last night called Dune. Obviously those of you who have followed the podcast know that I read the book, last year and, really enjoyed it. And they made a new movie. There was an old movie. And now that I've seen the new movie, it's like the old movie was not very good.
Ooh, yeah, no, it's pretty rough.
Yeah, pretty bad.
Yeah, pretty bad.
But this new one is pretty amazing. I think if I could change anything, there were a lot of things that were said that were kind of hard to hear. But
I've heard that.
Having read the book, I knew what was happening anyway, so it didn't really faze me.
Affected much, yeah.
But the visuals and the way that they stayed with the story was pretty amazing.
And how quickly they're able to move through like the first 30 minutes explaining it in an engaging way.
Yes.
Yeah. In the book, it takes a while to fully understand the politics that are happening in this, you know, multi-planetary system.
Yeah.
You know? So
yeah.
They did a really great job with that.
Yeah, they sure did. Now I'm in trouble with Angela because Angela wanted to take me to the theater to see it, but I'll just.
That's okay. I'll be your favorite parent.
Yeah.
Oh, well, here we go.
Yeah, I have been
for this week. You have been, yeah,
I
depends
have been
on.
The favorite for a while, but I think I just lost that status. The other thing is I was flipping through an old reference book that we've got back in the early 70s or late 60s. I'm going to give away how old
I am. Wow, Mike.
My parents bought something. They didn't buy encyclopedias, which was a big thing back then. People walked door to door selling encyclopedias. This guy came by and sold what's called a volume library, which is like a whole encyclopedia. It's maybe the Reader's Digest version of an encyclopedia, but yeah. It's a book that's this thick. And I used to flip through it back in the 70s and look at the pictures. They were like futuristic pictures of cars, which if I go look at them now, they look like ancient old antiques.
Yeah.
Because we've moved way past that. But stuck inside this book, I found a, I can show you, Thaddeus, since you're here, but it's a floor plan
yeah.
of a church that I drew up at some point in time for some unknown reason. Mm. And I used to do this all the time.
You used to do floor plans a lot. Yeah.
I used to do floor plans all the time. If I was in a meeting and I was having a hard time paying attention,
I would start
drawing a floor plan.
Wow.
And it was just one of those things I did. I just kind of sketched them out. I took architecture class, I think as a freshman in high school. And I don't know how I got into that class because I hadn't had geometry yet.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And my architecture teacher is like, how did you get in this class? I was like, well, I don't know. I just signed up for it and they put me in here.
Put me in.
And of course I drew the most difficult, I chose the most difficult design of anybody in the class. I did a diamond shaped house. So no corner was 90 degrees. And except for the interior rooms.
Right. Yeah.
But so all the other angles were odd and somehow or another, I passed that class. I'm not sure exactly how, but I used to really get into doing floor plans. I haven't done
this
one in a long time.
This is a very efficient floor plan right here.
You think so?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
And that's you would great. Probably know this kind of stuff.
Yeah, I might know a thing or two. Just a thing or two. This is a nice layout right here.
Well, you know, I thought it was pretty good. Maybe that's why I saved it.
Yeah.
But I was thinking about it when I was looking at it earlier. It's like, where's the utility room?
Oh. It's probably down the stairs.
It's got to be down the stairs in the basement.
The stairs,
yeah, that's what I figured. That's kind of what I went with.
It wasn't forgotten. We knew it was down the stairs. We both did.
I like the way you think. So anyway, well, let's just jump into this. Those of you who are listening out there, you probably know Thaddeus from the TV show that he is seen on a regular basis. I think you're currently filming season 7, right?
Yeah, we're working away at season 7.
Yeah, so pretty exciting. Good Bones, filmed right here in Indianapolis. And so it's one of our favorite shows.
It's funny when I'll talk to, because with my work, I talk to people all across the country. I won't say that everybody in the world knows it, but a lot of times they'll be like, oh, Indianapolis, isn't that where Good Bones? And I'm like, yeah, it is where Good Bones is shown. And a lot of the houses are in the neighborhood where I grew up. And that kind of thing.
Nancy grew up on Barth Avenue.
Okay. Yeah. We did our first house off Barth.
Yeah.
So our first show house, I should say. So after our pilot episode, the first one we did was off Barth, off Shelby.
Yeah.
In Town Square.
She lived in that little segment between Pleasant Run and
Beecher.
And Beecher.
Okay.
So it's a little short segment there.
I live right by where you used to live. I live off of,
you don't want to say this on the podcast. Yeah. You can tell us later.
You tell us later.
I'll tell you guys later.
Yeah, you can tell us later.
I'm such an open person. I was like, breaks.
I can always edit, just so you know. Yeah. If you say something that you're like, well, I really wish I hadn't said that, you can let me know.
But once it's out there, this isn't
broadcast live, so just like
we'll chat later.
We'll chat later.
Yeah, you can tell us.
I live very, very close to there.
Okay.
Well, cool. We'll hear all about that in just a little bit. You guys won't, but I will. But obviously, we're going to touch on the show.
Yeah.
So let's talk about the show just a little bit. But the one of the real reasons why I wanted you on the podcast is because you're a whole lot more than the show gives you credit for.
It's just one dimension of you, right? There's so much more.
There's Absolutely. More to you than the demo god.
Right. Yeah. I do love to demo. Like, I swear in a past life, I was probably born as like an ox, like just some sort of work animal. There's something about 90 to 100 degree weather that I love.
Really?
Yeah. It's like, I love to sweat. I love to be in the sun. I love to work hard. And the dirtier I get and the more I see other people not enjoying it, the more I enjoy it. It might be just like the mental place I can go to where it's like, I'm not going to suffer through this. I'm going to have fun doing this. I'm going to embrace the dirtiness and I'm just going to go 100 miles an hour.
You don't want to get a little dirty.
Yeah, no.
You're going to get totally dirty.
Yeah, if I'm going to get dirty, I'm going to get dirty. Yeah, so I don't think I've ever done a demo day where I went home and I was able to wash my hair once. You know, it's usually a few shampoos,
times.
And two or three conditioners. And then
you're still finding little pieces of grit a couple of days later.
Absolutely. Especially on the scalp. It's so hard to get out. So,
yeah.
You know, the show shows my very, kind of carefree, goofy side. I'm very nonchalant about most things, not too attached to any sort of sense of seriousness about the world, and that comes through. And so some people think I'm like too goofy, but really it stems from just an upbringing where I learned a lot about life pretty quick. And I learned, just kind of that time passes by quick and you don't want to take anything too seriously and you just want to be a loving, caring person. And I think my nature is childlike in a sense. I like things to be very lighthearted, and that's what I convey.
Yeah. And you like to have fun while you're, you know, while you're working.
Oh, absolutely.
And
yeah.
So I think I asked Karen this a couple episodes back, but what's the craziest thing that you've found in a house?
Snakes.
Snakes.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Pythons. Yeah.
Really?
It's, on one of the episodes off of Olive Street. Person who'd lived there previous to us demoing it, bred snakes. They bred pythons and they had a huge python cage. And, while we were demoing, we found about 4 or 5 baby pythons and we were super curious.
Were they in the cage or out of the cage?
No, out of the cage.
Out of the cage.
One was in ductwork. Another one was in a jewelry box and I got to live my best life because, maybe this is manifesting, but as a young child, we always joked about me having my show, which was called Tad's Wild Ride. I was a huge fan of Steve Irwin. I loved him so much. So when I found the snakes, immediately grabbed one. I was like, Crocky, mate, look at this thing. What are the chances we're going to find it in here? And I just love that. And then like, as a kid, we like went to South Carolina for family vacation and I like, an alligator was crossing the street and at like 10 years old, I went up and grabbed its tail and shook it real quick. And then I zigzagged so hard and I ran away from it. I was like, that's exactly what Steve Irwin would have did.
Yeah.
And I nailed it. So, but yeah, snakes is probably the craziest thing we found in a house. We found a, old rusted gun in a soffit. You know, you'd say that porn would be surprising to find in the house, but that next to poop is the most common you found.
Yeah. No kidding.
Yeah. Dead serious. There's like playing cards, like stuck in between floor joists.
You're like,
just all kinds of stuff. Yeah. Yeah. It's poop and then it's porn. So it's something with the letter P, I guess, in front of it.
Oh my goodness.
You find a lot of it. So
now Karen told us about the frozen brownies shaped like poop. Did she?
Oh my gosh. That is such a sore subject. I have a, for people who watch Good Bones, they know I have a gag reflex and bad smells, anything that is just too close to my face, that's disgusting. My body just starts and rejecting it. I believe it was season 1. Lenny and I were called upstairs into a house off Hosbrook and you know, there's poop in there, which it's like, okay, that's pretty normal.
Yeah.
And then I saw this poop. I'm like, that's a fresh pile of poop. I know what a fresh pile of poop looks like compared to the old. And that's a squatter. And they were here maybe 6 hours ago. And then it just got weird. Mina and Karen were like, Tad, you should eat it. And I'm like, nope, there's no way I'm going to eat that. And Karen's like, I'll give you $50. And I was like, no. Mina's like, I will give you $50. And then Lenny was like, I'll give you $50. And then Karen doubled her money. So she's like, you could have $250 if you just took a bite of this poop. And I'm like, no, there's no price with which I would put this poop in my mouth for a second. And then Karen's like, well, I'll do it. And you have to understand, I really thought it was poop. Lenny really thought it was poop.
You thought, so she's lost it this time.
Yeah, like, absolutely. You know, I know she's done some crazy stuff, but this takes a cake. And she picks it up in her hand and she takes a bite out of it. And just immediately, and then Mina grabs some of it and like throws it at Lenny.
Oh god!
And in my head, I'm just like, is this real? Am I in a video game? Is this a simulation? I like run behind a door and I yak. I actually put some stuff out of the body because I was like, she's eating poop. They're throwing poop. What is happening in the world right now? My stepdad, Lenny, he's like incredibly respectful and he's got his like arm raised. Like he's about to do something because we're just like stunned that they're eating and throwing poop right now. How did this like checkup on the second floor turn into poop eating and poop flinging?
So have you gotten them back yet?
Gosh. Yeah. You know, not in the same way. If we're talking about the amount of times I've scared them or pranked them, yes, but nothing in terms of like the immediate visceral reaction of like, oh, what's happening?
Call me.
Right. Oh, yeah.
Actually, pranking is one of Nancy's specialties.
See, with my childlike nature, I love to scare people. Yeah. I love to prank people. Like, I'll just hide behind a doorway. I'll just wait for you to walk through. I'll go, pow.
Yeah.
And my daughters have issues because of stuff like that.
That's so awesome.
I used to do to them.
All right. That's good to know.
Not necessarily.
One day we'll be on one of those shows where they're telling all
talking
about.
Talking all about, yeah.
I'm sorry, Dr. Phil.
Yeah.
Anyway, now do you regret? You could have had $250. You know, it was just a brownie, right? It's just a frozen brownie.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know how they're making their fake poo nowadays, but it looks very real. It looks very, very, very real. So, that's a $250. I was willing not to risk it on.
Well, I do get a kick out of watching you tear into houses. And tear down chimneys and drop them on things.
Yes.
Break gutters and all that. But I know that you got more going on than just tearing into things.
Right.
So I discovered your Love Heals clothing line, right? And you got a Love Heals website.
That is correct.
So tell us a little bit about that. What's the history of that and how did you get into that? And what's that mean to you?
Yeah. So, Love Heals it's a big story. So it'll probably take me like 5 minutes. Is that okay? If I stick to
whatever time you want,
whatever time I need. Okay. So, growing up, you know, around age 3, parents got divorced, not too atypical. But they got divorced and my parents shared joint custody. Both got remarried. So that's just kind of difficult growing up in. And then around like 10 to 12, my mom like fought my dad for like full custody, ended up getting it. And while I love my mother, she didn't see things always in the best of ways. So we kind of got taught to really not like our dad that much.
Just to clarify for people who aren't clear, Karen is not the mother you're talking about. Karen is Karen like stepmother
Exactly. Right. So Karen is my dad's first ex-wife.
Okay.
And later on in life, after this story, I lived with Karen for a little bit.
Okay.
And she took me in. So my mom's name was Cheryl. And so she got full custody of us, but not too long after that, she died of a drug addiction.
Sorry.
Thank you. And at age 12, I found her. I went downstairs after going to a friend's house. Well, first I tried to find her everywhere. I went to her bedroom. I went out to her office because she had a trailer out there that she ran her medical billing company through. Just checked the whole house and then went downstairs to the basement and she was passed away in the laundry, you know? And, I remember calling my father and my father worked in Kentucky and, you know, he's like, this isn't possible. You know, he's like, try to wake her. And you know, just to be honest and vivid, you know, I was tugging on my mom who had already been gone for several hours. So she's cold, she's stiff. And you just, my whole life changed.
Traumatic.
Right there,
obviously. Very traumatic. Yeah, flip. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah. There is a essay I wrote, and one of the best descriptors of my mom was, she was a brown, sorrel-eyed woman who confessed her love to me day in and day out in ways that resounded with such magnitude in my heart. So while she had character flaws that we all do, she was immensely loving. And my father was raised by Polish immigrants who were a little less than that loving nature that my mom had. So when I moved in with my father, he had still worked in Kentucky, taking care of me. And his way of showing love is making sure our family gets together on holidays, being helpful financially, and at key moments in your life, really letting you know he loves you in a really powerful way. Mm-hmm. But at that young age, I didn't know that yet. So after my mom died, 11 months later, her sister died of a drug overdose. And then 2 years after my mom died, on the anniversary of my mom's death, her brother took his life.
Oh, wow.
And then about 4 months after that, my best friend Ben Elo in eighth grade died of a heart arrhythmia in the shower. Mm. And then I almost lost my sister Kaylee, who is my oldest sister from my biological mother, Cheryl. She got into a car accident where she tore her aortic valve, collapsed both her lungs, broke her pelvis, broke her femur. She was in a coma for about 4 months, hospital for about six. And then not long after that, my grandma passed next to me in a chair.
Oh, wow.
So
what a string.
Yeah, man. It was. So from about sixth grade to eighth grade, very, very depressed. Just felt like a victim. I was like, how could the world do this to me? Why would they take the most loving person out of my life, which is my mother? And then all this death was following. I'm like, you know, life is nothing but fire and brimstone. Mm-hmm, and this is awful. And I believed in God before my mom died. And then after that, it was like, why would God ever allow this thing to happen?
Right, right.
More felt like I was the target, you know, like the book of Job. And
sure.
I'm like, yo, dude, what the hell is going on, man? And I just got to the darkest place in my life where several times I thought I would, you know, go ahead and get out of it. And then my brother William, who's Karen's second oldest son, he had reached out to me and started, you know, taking more of an interest in me because he was out at college and now he was back home, so he could see the state of my heart. And he suggested I go on this retreat in Crestone, Colorado, called Awakening Souls, which is a retreat run by Hindu monks and nuns. So my dad, who was unsupportive of it, didn't help me with it. So I got a Greyhound bus ticket. And at age 13, I took a Greyhound bus from Indianapolis all the way to Colorado.
Wow.
And then hopped in a van with a bunch of people I didn't know and went to this retreat ran by Hindu monks and nuns. And it was upon that retreat that my life changed. So when I got there, I'm like, why are all these people smiling? Again, don't they know life is fire and brimstone? They're fools. And then over the course of several days, things started to open up. I was raised by my stepdad, who is a construction worker as well. He's a GC, very hyper-masculine, just like he was raised. So showing emotion was not something that was popular. Considered weak.
Right.
You know, after my mom died and the string of other deaths, I mean, I can really say I can count on both hands how many times I cried in like 3 years. Cause I thought I wasn't supposed to do that. Mm-hmm. So about 6 days into this retreat, we had an all guys day and an all girls day. And part of that all guys day was sitting around in a circle and watching these grown men, talk about their traumas. And, you know, it pretty much started directly to my left. So I was almost the last person to go. And as they started going around, I'm like, wussy, wussy, big man crying, what's up, wussy. And then as it got about halfway, like the person was directly across me, I stopped feeling that. And I was like, oh, something's happening to me. And as it got closer and closer, I could feel all of the things in my heart bubbling up. And it gets to me even a little bit right now. Sometimes I tell the story a lot, but sometimes it still does. And as it was coming around, I could feel everything bubbling up inside of me. And when it got to me, I just let it all out. Tears that I probably should have cried for years came out. And the pain and the hurt of losing the most important person in my life. And then just feeling so alone after that death. Because at age 12, you're not young enough to where it just, you don't understand it, but neither are you old enough to where you to really comprehend. Grasp it, mm-hmm. you know? Right. So, and what ended up happening was six men, so three men on each side of me, cradled me. And I'm like a 160-pound dude who was raised by a hyper-masculine stepfather.
Right, right.
I was like, what? You guys want to do what? But I was like, okay. And they did. And Dayananda, one of the monks there, just stood above me, continually wiping away my tears and letting me know that everything was okay and that my mother still loved me very much and things happen sometimes and that's okay. And she's still there and you are perfectly wonderful how you are. And in that moment, Love Heals was born because on this retreat where I had known these people for 6 days, somehow who they were for me as strangers created a space for me to heal the most aching part of my heart, a part that really had consumed me in the sense of a black hole where nothing was escaping it and I couldn't find a way out. And to be loved by people I didn't know in such a powerful way that helped me heal something was immense. And then returning from that retreat, I gained insight to what I feel like has been my purpose since, which is being that love for other people, not just loving my father and mother, my step family or half siblings, like loving strangers the same way I love my family.
Right.
You know, like there's no reason I can't love a stranger on the street as much as I love my father. Maybe, you know, not in the same way.
Right.
But with the same intensity. I can still want their life to be just as happy as my father's. I can still listen to them how I would listen to my father. And I found when I'm vulnerable and I'm authentic, it opens up so many doors with people. Because one of the things we all have in common is that we all suffer and go through suffering. And it's something that unifies us. You know, like when 9/11 happened, that amount of suffering, something about suffering brings you together. So I found when I was vulnerable and I was loving, the vulnerability led to further authenticity in myself. Vulnerability led to me getting down to who I was. And then when I was able to be my more authentic version of myself, I knew people loved me just for who I was. So Love Heals has been an idea for the past 14, 15 years until last year. And I'm not balling yet, but I'm balling on a budget. So I was like, okay, where can I start at? And I was like, all right, you know, every big thing starts with a small step. So I'm starting with little ripples in the ocean. And that's just creating apparel that carries a positive message. When someone sees it, it's a reminder of light and optimism and goodness in the world. That's kind of...
I told Nancy...
Full story. That was a little bit longer than 5 minutes.
No, that's fine. No, that's cool. I told Nancy I'm going to need to get a couple of shirts from you because...
we can trade it for the sauce.
Yeah, there you go. I like that deal. I like
you
trades.
Know, part ownership
trades
if
are
I get
cool.
the recipe.
No, I don't know how many of the podcast listeners know this, but most people who know me personally know that one of the things that is a real driving factor in my life right now is love, is learning to love people the way that I think God intended us to love people. And yeah. I wrote a whole book called Loving Out Loud, which I mentioned the video thing earlier. Yeah. Starting next spring, I'm going to kind of transition and this podcast will remain and continue, but I'm probably going to start a separate podcast that I'm calling Love Mentalism. Mm. And
I like that a lot.
Versus judgmentalism. So I may have to have you back to talk and tell your story again
on there.
Oh
my gosh.
But so this thing is kind of a big deal to me. Yeah. And so I saw some of your shirts and I thought, I got to get a couple of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, just so you know, the website is.
It's www.loveheals.live, but I say live. I like that. Yeah, I do I like too. That. I was like, I'm not going to say live. I'm going to say live. So, live a life that love heals in, you know? So www.loveheals.live.
Well, it's true. And I think the thing I appreciated about your story is we tend to live in a culture of prosperity, and not just financially, but prosperity. Life is good. How are you? I'm fine.
Right. Yeah.
So you really do need to acknowledge, well, I might be okay, but it's really tough right now.
Absolutely.
Or today's not a good day. Call me tomorrow. Kind of, you know, kind of thing. But to acknowledge that we all have those challenges, but yet there is a positive way, and not just happiness, yippee, skippy.
Right. Yeah.
But a journey or a way to find peace in the midst of the storm, so to speak.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And I think there's two, just taking off a little bit of what you were talking about, how, you know, you lived in a, your father was very hyper-masculine and you just didn't cry. You didn't share, you know. And I think that we have a culture, particularly in this country, where we all kind of keep our, everything that's going on the inside. And we don't have an environment where we can be vulnerable with one another.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, the world would be, I think, a whole lot better off if we would find a way to break that cycle.
Absolutely. Right? I think the term that we're kind of mentioning is emotional intelligence.
Yeah.
You know, so, I actually just finished reading a book called, Biology of Belief by Bruce Lipton. And he's a cellular biologist who made some stunning discoveries. I'm not going to say too much about it,
but I might want to read it. And exactly.
But it is, an absolutely incredible book. And it was one of the things it had, mentioned was that EQ, so emotional intelligence, was correlated to success more than IQ did.
Yes.
In terms of financially, or a sense of fulfillment of achieving happiness in life. And I also just finished a book called For the Love of Men, A New Mindful Approach to Masculinity. That was really, really good and talked about the needs for men to be more emotionally available.
It's funny when you say that, because I grew up, I had three older brothers.
Yeah.
Quite a bit older, but three older brothers. And I was the only girl. And I can remember watching a show on TV and, you know, what the Yearling, whatever, Disney or whatever.
Yeah.
And if my mom or I would tear up, you know, they would joke and make fun of us.
Right.
So it was always, who's going to run to the bathroom first and turn on the water so they don't know I'm in there.
Yeah.
Crying over this sappy show I just saw or whatever. But again, attributed to kind of like the culture of masculinity as we have known it.
Me, on the other hand, I cry at the drop of a hat.
He does. We always.
Same. I'm a big crier.
Mike's a big crier.
I feel like sometimes in the dating world, I'm kind of an anomaly because I'm like, I'm kind of built. I'm stocky. I got this rustic construction background. So I look really tough, but then I'm a really big softy and I'm like pretty easy to like tear up, whether they're tears of gratitude or whatever, then they're just kind of like, this is different. You know, he's big and he's rustic, but he's also a big, teddy bear.
Sometimes get to speak at church sometimes.
Yeah.
And the big joke with my family is how long will it take
as he would walk up, the girls and I would be like, okay, we'd make bets. Mm-hmm. How many minutes before he starts, you know?
And then whoever makes the money just gives it to the tithe bucket, right?
Right.
Oh, there you go. I'm pretty sure that didn't
happen. That's a win-win scenario.
It was just for bragging rights, I think.
God wins in that situation. Yeah,
always.
I don't think there was any real dollars on there.
In spite of us.
So you're talking about, you're also writing a book.
Yes, I'm working on a book.
So tell me about this. Of course, you know, I've written a couple of books, and And well, four, I guess. Working on number five.
That's so awesome. And we have so much to talk about.
We do.
After this podcast and on the next podcast.
We do. So tell me about the book that you're writing.
Yeah. So I've wanted to write a book for about 4 or 5 years now. And I started like 2 years ago. I was just writing in a notebook. I got about 120 pages in, you know, front and back of the notebook, just writing in pencil or pen. And then I scrapped it. I was like, nope, this isn't it. And I make these posts on social media that are pretty thought provoking for people. And I've just keep getting the feedback. You know, you need to write a book. You need to write a book. And I'm like, I want to write a book. I want to write a book. And just finally got to a place where I'm like, okay, I'm going to really devote time to this and I'm going to get after it. So I'm working on a book that is kind of a guide to emotional intelligence. And I tell it through my story. So me growing up and the different things I learned, you know, so like starting with like the vulnerability, you know, and how when we're more vulnerable with ourselves and with others, it leads to further authenticity. That authenticity helps us remove the masks that we wear. And then if we're someone who's very insecure, worried what other people think about us, or they're around us for the wrong reasons, when we get to the closer authentic core of ourselves, we know that they're there just because they love us. Mm-hmm. There's nothing we're hiding from them. There's no ego in the way. And what a powerful thing that is, to just know you're loved because you're you. And so with emotional intelligence, there's a lot of ways to take out the variables that are hiding things from you. And then there's, yeah, just a whole bunch of different perspective shifts. I feel like the past 15 years of my life, I've been working on ways to shift perspective or see things closer to how they really are. So kind of, you know, stripping things away also to see closer. So yeah, it's a book on emotional intelligence and learning mechanisms. One of my favorite ones, and I'll go ahead and share a little bit of it, is words are power. You know, so when we speak, it's a vibration that moves air, molecules, and then it hits your ear, and then you process that information. For people who don't speak Spanish, you know, they wouldn't be able to process it. You know, so we have a certain way we process that vibration once it gets to our ear. You know, so if you're somebody who has been berated by your father or your family members, or you're always in a high stress situation with your boss and your palms start sweating, and, you know, that starts to kick in your sympathetic nervous system, which is your fight or flight system. And when that kicks in, your cells actually start dividing faster. They're trying to also help you out in the situation. And when your cells divide faster, you know, they're making copies of your DNA. And at the end of the double helix of your DNA, you have these caps called telomeres. And I want you to think of telomeres as like the hard part of your shoelace. So each time that your DNA divides, part of your shoelace, hard part, is getting cut off. And if it keeps dividing long enough, it starts getting into the shoelace where it starts to fray. And that's what happens to your DNA. And the removal of our caps, our telomeres, is the most linked to us aging or becoming diseased, because our bodies can no longer make accurate copies of our DNA. Well, how does that relate to your words? Well, if you were here berating me and I was constantly accepting it, then my cells would divide faster. And then I would die quicker because the caps of my telomeres are gone quicker. So the words that we say and what the energy we allow ourselves to accept can actually affect us on a biological time clock. But we also have the ability to render something meaningless. You know, so growing up, my father didn't always say the most loving things. And having one parent gone, it was really important what my father would say when he said it. So it got to a point where I had to decide that that meant no more to me because it wasn't good for me. So a lot of people, they hear things, they immediately react and they think they have no choice. Mm-hmm. But we all do have a choice. And right after you hear that, you get to decide how you process that information. You get to just decide how to rewire that. So
it's funny when you say that, I think about in my work situation, I have several people who, I manage, and I'm frequently reminding them, number one, we're not saving lives in what we do. So let's give it the, you know, pay attention, do a good job, but yeah, not more attention than you need to.
Absolutely.
And consider this situation, learn from it what you can, but water on a duck's back.
Yeah.
Let it roll off, it go on, and you know, go on for the next day.
Yeah.
Because it can hinder you. It can. Especially when you care. You care about doing a good job. You care about being a good friend or
and when
relative or what have you, you know?
Yeah. And you know, another emotional intelligence thing I write about is like any emotion that you feel, whether you're angry, you're sad, you're irritated, you're disappointed, it all stems from a place of I care about something. Mm-hmm. I'm feeling this way because I care. And like we were kind of mentioning, hypermasculinity doesn't really allow you to say I care in a really vulnerable way. So we get angry as a way to be like, well, I care about you so much. And it sounds a lot worse. But at the root of that, it's I care. And it's like, you know, Dad, I love you so much and you mean so much to me, and I already have one parent that's not here. So when you say these things to me, it's really hard for me not to believe them about myself. And I want to believe that I can be the best version of myself. And I really want to hear that you believe in that too. So when you say these things, I'm not always able to defend myself, mm-hmm. and it really hurts me. And I don't want to have that relationship with you. I want you to speak positive things into my life. And that sounds incredibly alien to most people. They're like, I would never fucking say that ever, because we have this pride. We have this anger that stands in the way.
And it's hard to articulate exactly what you're feeling if you're not in touch with that, or just to that.
You have to be able to name it first.
You have to name it first.
Yeah.
But I also think what you were talking about in terms of vulnerability.
Yeah.
That gives you great power, but
it's scary.
I better trust you. If I'm going to tell you where I live or where I grew up, you know, you're not going to cross that line. You're not going to do that kind of thing. And I think that's.
Because vulnerability opens you up to possibly further pain.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you know, that's the double-edged sword of it. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And you know, what I tell people is when you get to that kind of thought, well, it's like, if I open up, you know, this and this could happen. I mean, you'd have to run into a really, really tough person who was really unhappy with life. If you were to share your heart and they'd be like, who cares? You know, most people are going to respond with some level of empathy. You know, there's a few people from the gym I go to, or just friends who, maybe not friends, but I'm in the same social circle. Mm-hmm. And there's been a few people who've come to me lately and be like, hey man, can we talk? And we've talked because there's something going on in their life and they think I can say something or just listen and give them some sort of feedback that'll be helpful. And because I shared in that with them, right, their vulnerability and then return vulnerability, mm-hmm. It created a stronger bond.
Mm-hmm. It's amazing how many people don't feel like they have anyone in their life that they can talk to that will listen.
Yeah.
I mean, I've known that. I don't know. I have one of these faces that people, I don't know. I guess people feel like they can talk to.
Yep.
Me.
Yep.
And I might be in a restaurant. I might be on an airplane. And the next thing I know everything about the person
next
that
to
I'm talking to, that I'm next to, or the cashier at the restaurant or the server, whatever it is, because they start telling me things. And the thing that I've not always been good about this, but the thing that I have tried to do is just be that person that listens.
Yeah. You know?
And I may not have an answer, but sometimes people don't, they're not really necessarily looking for an answer. They're just looking for someone who cares enough to listen.
Absolutely. And listening can be, you know, more powerful than anything you could ever say.
The other thing I was thinking about when you're giving the example on the biological impact is that I have read before that both positive and negative stress affect your body biologically the same way.
Positive and negative stress?
Yeah. So you're under stress because you know, you want to please the boss, you want to get the promotion, you want to do well. And you know, it's all this, or the stress is I got the promotion, you know, right. Then it, yeah. But that biologically stress affects your body the same way. So too much of anything could be good.
Right.
Could be not good, I guess.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. The kind of everything in moderation.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
So to riff off of that as well, something I recently came across, because Instagram has a great algorithm where it gives me a lot of gurus and teachers, and something that's been recently in my mind is like, you know, I'm doing this challenge right now where I'm not drinking and I'm kind of doing things to more of an extreme. You know, and before this challenge, I drank a good amount this summer because it was COVID last summer. So I had two summers right. to drink for. That's my excuse. You know, so everything's good in moderation. But I never thought about it in terms of thinking. Sometimes we have too much, we have excessive thoughts. Mm-hmm. And sometimes our excessive thoughts should be cut out and we should have them in more moderation.
You can beat yourself up.
Exactly. And going back to the book that I'm working on, I have this concept that I'm writing about called the Trinity of Change. So it first starts out linearly. Thank you so much.
In my other world, I sell linear products. Linear.
There we go.
You came to the right place.
Linearly. Right? There we go. Nailed it. So the Trinity of Change starts linearly as awareness, thoughts, words, and then actions. Gosh, because I was so focused on that word, I lost my train
three,
of thought.
Three things.
Yeah.
It'll come back around.
It will. Hold tight. I'll go ahead and tell you about it because I started talking about it. I just don't know what I was telling you for. but the awareness, thoughts, words, actions. So anytime, excessive thoughts.
Right.
You know, so the first step to making any sort of change in life is becoming aware of it. So before you're aware of it, I call it a blind spot. It's what you don't know that you don't know. And it takes something, I believe in God, the universe. I think it can give you that kind of infinite intelligence. I think it's out there and God can tell you something, or you have someone in your life who points something out. So it starts with awareness, right?
Because they see our blind spots better than
exactly. They've got quite the good view from up there. And so, like, let's say you want to change your excessive thinking. You're a constant worrier and you can't stop it. You know, so the first thing you have to do is become aware of, like, oh, wow, I'm really a constant worrier. I just let it drill me through the day and it's like, I can't stop. And then it's like, well, what's next? Okay, I need to start changing things in my words and my thoughts. So when the worry comes up, like, oh, okay, I have to get this done. I haven't got this done yet. And I still have to go to my dad's house and I have to do this. You're aware when that thought comes up, and then that's your chance to like reprogram it. So you change the thought to like, okay, I do have these things still to do, but worrying is praying for the things that I don't want to happen. So you say some sort of corrective thought, or even in your speech, if you maybe think ill of yourself and be like, yeah, I'm really not that great. Instead of saying that, be like, yeah, you know, I'm actually doing really well right now, or I'm trying really hard. So once you have the awareness and you start correcting the words and thoughts, those things are happening abstractly. So you might not really even get to notice the change actually happening because you can't necessarily see it yet. But then you see it in action, right? Action tends to be pretty tangible. You know, so it's like if you don't think that great of yourself and then you're in a social situation where you are aware that, okay, I didn't feel that great about myself, but then you're like, but I'm actually a really cool person and these people really love me and care about me and I've shared a lot of vulnerable moments with them. And then if it results in you being at ease with your group of friends and not feeling a sense of social anxiety, you have now, at least maybe for the first time, accomplished the action at the end of that. Mm-hmm. So after it goes in a linear formation, it becomes a feedback loop and a triangle and a trinity where they feed back to each other, right? So if my action is, if I'm like sitting here with you guys, and I'm kind of like turned in or my arms are crossed. All right. So the action is that I'm uncomfortable. I'm I'm anxious. So then I go back to awareness. Okay, I'm now aware that I'm doing that. I'm going to open my body back up. And then I'm going to go to my thoughts and be like, hey, this is actually really cool. These people are really nice. You don't have to be afraid here. Your lizard brain is not firing correctly. They're not gonna hurt you. we're speaking, you know? So,
right.
Yeah. So that trinity of change is something that excessive thinking, just anything that you want to make a change in your life. I think that's kind of how it starts. And, each time I share more about the book or as I'm writing, and maybe you've experienced this too. I bet you have. But you have like everything in your head, but you can't really see the order that it needs to go in until you start writing it out.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Okay.
And then like, you see other things.
Yes.
You need to go in there too.
Yeah. And that's been my thought has been, I have to mentally understand the order of all this stuff before I try writing it. And now I'm learning because the experience of writing, it's like, no, I need to just write. And then things are going to come to me. I'm learning more as I'm writing about things I already know about. But I'm pulling more information out and I'm like, oh, this is order. And it's just something I could never accomplish mentally. I needed to see it in front of me and have it come out of me.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, I'm going to look forward to that book.
I'm looking forward to your book.
Well, we can fix that pretty quick.
But, sweet.
I'll have to wait for yours to get published.
Yeah.
So that'll be cool.
I will say, you know, Mike's written 4 books.
I'm a quick reader too. So
are you?
Yeah.
But
most of them I don't like.
Okay. Yeah. That's fair.
She doesn't like my fantasy thriller books.
Okay.
So
just because, you know, there's good people, there's bad people. I can see that on the news. And if I'm going to read, I'm either reading for like self-improvement or to escape, to relax a bit.
So it's not necessarily that you don't like his
it's
books.
Written well.
It's the genre that
yes,
you don't
it's
like.
The genre, and he knew that when he wrote them.
Right.
But this Loving Out Loud book, I love it because it's very practical.
Yeah.
He shares stories in it where
it's very personal.
Personal. He shares stories in where people demonstrated love to him when he didn't do anything to necessarily deserve it.
Yeah.
But he also shares stories about he had an opportunity to maybe demonstrate love to someone and blew it.
Mm.
So there's a lot of vulnerability, but it's just stories and interactions that he had, but it gives you pause.
Right. Yeah.
And if we don't stop and think, if we don't examine, if we don't take that pause, we don't learn. We don't see the talk that we're giving ourselves.
Exactly.
We don't hear those things. So,
we're very reactionary based creatures. We feel the stimulus and then we just respond. We really don't stop in between and think how to respond or to change our response.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Dude, I'm so excited to read your book. And I'm just starting to get the energy vibe that we're going to be really good friends.
I think so.
We're going to have conversations.
I think so.
Way outside of this
Nancy
podcast.
Has your cell phone number, but I'm going to have to get it from you.
Absolutely.
Before you go. So we've been gone for a little over an hour. So this is awesome. But I think we need to squeeze in the random questions.
Yes, let's do
point.
It.
So you get to pick
you
a
can
card.
Pick those
any
or you
card.
Can pick from there. Whatever you want to do.
Okay. All right. We're going to.
You have three questions there. Read them and you get to pick,
you pick the question
and you'll answer it first. And then Mike and I both have to give an answer to it.
Wonderful. All right. If you could go back and relive one day of your life, what day would it be? That's the first question. Second one is describe a time when you did something reckless and daring. And I mean, that's every day. It's probably not going to be that one. You can watch that. And three is what can we learn from children? That's a good one. So it's between 1 and 2. Let me think for a second. I got to go with the third one. What can we learn from children?
All right.
Children are obviously the most joyful. Mm-hmm. They have the least amount of judgment. I would say I'm not religious. I'm not necessarily Christian, but one of the things I love about Jesus was that people could just come up to him and be like, yo, this is what I am. And they'd be like, he'd be like, cool, follow me. And he was just his vibrant light. And children have that same thing where they're not judgmental and they'll love you. So constantly humbling myself to be able to look at children and say, what do they understand about life that I can't because of the experience I've had?
Mm-hmm.
And getting back to that kind of joy of living. So I think what we can learn from children is that as adults, we lose something that they still have. And if we can humble ourselves enough to believe that these children know maybe happiness better than we do, we can learn from them.
Mm. All right. Yeah. I like it. I like it.
So the question is, again, what can we learn from children?
Nancy?
How to walk down the street.
Mm.
I was recently, I had taken my mother to a doctor's appointment. I was taking her home. And this school, obviously they'd had a fire drill of some kind. All the kids were outside and the bells rang and they're all starting to walk in. And we often joke about, you know, you see toddlers and that resembles a drunk person, the right. way they yep. bounce around uh-huh. and such. But these kids were walking back in and they were just kind of skipping and wiggling and it's no care as to what anybody thought as to how they were walking down that sidewalk to right. go back in. And I thought there's a freedom in that as an adult. I should be able to just kind of dance my way down the street or through the store.
Children have no boundaries in yeah. some ways, right? I remember when I was a kid, I thought everybody's yard was where I could play.
Yeah.
You know, I was in everybody's yard.
Yeah. You didn't know what a plot plan was.
I did not. I didn't know anything about trespassing.
Yeah.
You know, it's just like we used to have these giant games of army. Mm-hmm. Across, we had these oversized blocks. So they were like 2 or 3 blocks long, normal block width. And we would have these giant games of army after school where we were playing army in everyone's yard across mm-hmm. that entire scope. I think we finally had to shut it down when some guy who worked nights
did not appreciate
army having yeah,
he
his
had
backyard.
A little problem with it. But, you know, we just kind of had this lack of boundaries. We just felt like the world was ours, right?
Yeah.
And we grow up and all of a sudden, well, I can't, you know, I can't cut through that guy's yard over there, or I can't, you know, I can't do this or I can't do that. We have all these limitations that are put on us. And I think if we could kind of, not that we need to go trespassing in people's yards, right. but we need to have this sense of the world is there for us to enjoy. And we need to go out and have that sense of joy of seeing what's out and around us.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So I don't know if I said that well, but you know, if I could relearn something from a child, I think that would be in the mix.
Yeah.
In the mix.
Yeah. So. I think what I heard was like releasing some of the limitations that we've gained as adults.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So we can reconnect with what's around
and
us.
And maybe retaining the innocence. Yeah, because we lose that innocence as we get older, right? And
absolutely.
So if you could regain the innocence and lose the boundaries, you know, maybe yeah. it would be a whole lot more. People would be nicer, I think.
I think they would too. Definitely.
All right. Well, how you want to share how people can find you when they want to follow you? So we already talked about loveheals.live.
Yep.
So what else we got?
Yeah, so you can find my Facebook page. It's just, that one's Tad Starziak. So you may type in Tad on Facebook and you can find my page there. On Instagram, it is the_demogod. If you see a dude with really short jorts and long hair, you've found the right page. That would be me. You can find my Instagram for Love Heals at loveheals_apparel. The last L in apparel will be followed by 2 other L's because the regular spelling was already taken. And you can find me on Twitter at the same handle for, Instagram as well, the demo god. And yeah,
you know, the first time I saw that, I thought it was like demon god.
Ooh.
The demon god.
Oops.
What's up with him?
Right. What's going on with Thaddeus?
I had my birthday's on Christmas.
That's awesome.
And growing up, I always used to say, yeah, I was just an angel, this and that. And I had a high school teacher who was like, yeah, so was Satan once.
Oh,
and I was like,
wow, shots fired.
Ouch. Okay, yeah. I won't say that anymore.
Yeah,
gosh. Shot your innocence
right
there.
Right. Yeah. That's right.
Oh, gosh. All right, so folks, follow Thaddeus on his various formats.
Watch Good Bones.
Watch Good Bones.
Watch for the book.
Yes, absolutely.
What, wish
do you,
you
have
all
a
the
title
luck.
For it yet?
Yeah, I do. It's called Constructing Happiness.
Constructing I like it.
A Guide
like
to Emotional it. Intelligence. Yeah.
Oh, man. I can't wait. You got any kind of timeline on this thing yet, or is it too early to say?
Not too early to say. So I've got about 40,000 words written. I'm trying to get to 100,000. I'm writing at least 1,000 words every day, whether I want to or not.
That's a good way to do it.
There's stress involved in that.
Oh, my gosh. There's days where I'm just not feeling
it. You're breaking those things off. What are they called again?
The telomeres.
The telomeres.
Yeah.
Those telomeres.
I know.
The shoelaces.
Sometimes I'm just like, I got to find a couple good quotes to get another 100 words in this today. Rough draft, hoping to be done mid-January, end of January. And then hopefully we'll have it ready to go, published, and marketing it and have a release date by the fall of next year. And then probably, the following January 2023, I think, is when I'm trying to let it go. So
awesome.
Put it out into the world.
It's a good plan.
Oh, man.
Good plan.
It'll be exciting. We'll have to have
excited.
You'll have to have a book release party.
Oh, absolutely. You're invited if you bring sauce.
Bring the sauce.
Bring the sauce. You're going to bring the spaghetti with the sauce goes?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. All right, folks. Thank you for joining us on this edition of the Cutter's Notch podcast. Please, if you enjoyed this, please leave us a review. If you didn't enjoy this, well, go have some fun somewhere or something. But leave us a review. And thank you, Bill White, here for the post-production work you're going to do.
Thanks, Bill.
See, hey, Thaddeus says thanks, Bill. So you need to pay attention. And I guess that's it, folks. And we will see you, or you'll hear from us, on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.
The Cutter's Notch podcast is available through most podcast listing providers. New episodes drop approximately twice a month. You can email Michael at authormichaeldecamp@gmail.com. Michael DeCamp is the author of two novels, Abandoned Hope, Cutter's Notch Book 1, and Nozomi's Battle, Cutter's Notch Book 2, a collection of short stories entitled Cutter's Notch Interludes, and one nonfiction Christian devotional book entitled Loving Out Loud, Learning to Love in a Hate-Filled World. All books can be found on Amazon or ordered from your local bookseller. Please join us again on the next episode of the Cutter's Notch podcast.